Welcome to the Dildorf Storky Discourse on Sex, Dating, and Masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex blogger, a sex journalist, and a recent devotee of HypnoKink. I don't have my co-host Bex with me this week because they are off doing their own thing. But I do have a special guest with me this week, DJ Pynchon. Hi, Pynch.
Hey, how are you? It's very nice to be here. I'm DJ Pynchon. I am a blogger and writer and a hypno devotee of a number of years, and I'm really happy to be here.
Cool, cool. Yeah, I was really excited to get to talk to you. I actually found out about you through my boyfriend because when I started dating him, he's a big hypno kinkster, and I was fascinated by this immediately. And I was like, okay, what should I read? How do I learn about this? And he told me two books to read. One of them was Mind Play by Mark Wiseman, which is incredible, would highly recommend. And then the other one was Hypnotic Amnesia by you and Lee Allure. And
yes, and I would also recommend Mark Wiseman's book as well. It's a fantastic read for a good general overview of erotic hypnosis.
It's so good. And I actually got to interview Mark a month or two ago on Sex City Radio, which was like kind of a strange interview because like I was trying to keep it real profesh, and I was like, what kind of fun things can you do with erotic hypnosis? And he was like, I don't know, what do you like to do? And I was like, oh god, this is terrifying. But like the weird thing about like when my boyfriend said check out this book by DJ Pynchon, I was like, oh, that name sounds really familiar, I don't know why. And then I realized that we interacted on Twitter like for years, I think. Like, I had no idea you were a hypno person.
Yes. And yeah, I think I followed you shortly after I stumbled on the podcast. I think I've been listening since your guys' first episode. So, thank you so much for having me on, because it's very much an honor for me to be here.
Oh, thank you for being here. I love to talk to people with interesting kinks because I'm a big kink nerd. You have some very interesting ones. Okay, so we're going to mostly be talking about hypnosis today. There's some other stuff I want to get into later, but hypno is really, we haven't talked a whole lot about hypno on the show yet. So tell me, how did you first get interested in erotic hypnosis?
Well, for me, it started out probably younger than I should have been, but there was a movie called A Woman in Green, which is a Sherlock Holmes movie, and hypnosis played a very key part in the plot. And something about that just stuck with me as I got older. And I one day realized that a lot of the internet porn I was reading would have tags like MC or hypno on it, and those are the ones I kept on being drawn to. And so being someone who likes doing deep dives into things, I started doing more internet searches on it, looking at websites and stuff. And I really lurked for a large number of years, probably too many years, never really participating because, it can be a scary place and it to go out and meet people. And as people who sometimes have a little bit of social anxiety know, that taking that extra leap can be really tough.
Yeah.
But then I stumbled into people writing blogs about their experiences going to hypnosis conventions. And about 4.5 years ago, I took the first step to going to one of those things, and it really changed my life in many ways. There's a little bit of a backstory on that. The day I was supposed to go to my first convention, I actually got laid off.
Oh.
And my wife very nicely came and helped me pack my office. And as we're driving away, she says, "You're thinking of not going, aren't you?" And I said, "How could I go?" And she actually looked at me and said, "How could you not go?
Yeah.
There's nothing holding you back. You're just going to spend the weekend, you know, moping about. Go and have fun, have a good time." And it was probably the best decision, other than marrying her, probably the best decision I think I've ever made. So.
Did you do stuff at that convention, or did you just kind of hang back and see what it was like?
I wound up doing things. I was fully prepared just to hang back. You know, there were some hypno-dedicated websites where I'd been talking to some people about their experiences, and I talked to the organizer and volunteered, so I'd have something to do when I got there. But, you know, there were really, you know, I always want to say the erotic and Moses community, like other kink communities, is a wide and varied bunch, but generally they seem to be drawn to puns and science fiction.
That's so interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that. I mean, sci-fi maybe, but I wonder why puns. I guess like they're all very about their like words and voices. So I guess that kind of makes sense.
Absolutely. And because hypnosis is so much about language and you know how you play with words and how you play with concepts, I think that's what drew them to puns. But I figured at the very least, even if nothing else happened, I'd be among people I could trade puns and science fiction stories with.
That's so interesting. I like that you mentioned about the Sherlock Holmes movie, because I feel like a lot of the hypno kinksters I've talked to have some kind of formative piece of media. They're really kind of lodged in their brain. Like for my boyfriend, it was Aladdin. And he's ranted at me many times about how like there's so much 90s children's media that features hypnosis prominently, and that probably gave a lot of people this kink. It's so interesting how like it brings up the question of like whether you're born with a kink or whether you just kind of like glom onto something that you see in a formative time in your life. Really weird stuff.
Yeah, no, that's been a big discussion. I know I've thought about a lot because, you know, depending on what generation you are, like I've heard people talk about the Jungle Book. I've heard people talk about certain Scooby-Doo cartoons. I've heard, you know, everything from Star Trek with the Jedi mind, or with the mind meld, or Star Wars with the Jedi mind trick, or there's tons of hypno and for people who like Doctor Who. So there's always all sorts of different media out there where it really can hit you, and if it hits you at a certain age, all of a sudden it does seem to be wired in for some reason.
Yeah, and it's interesting to hear you talk about like becoming more confident delving into the scene, because like from the few other hypno kinksters I know, it seems like that's really common. Like maybe that's common for kinky people in general, but it seems like because there's so many like misconceptions and like harmful misconceptions about hypnosis, like a lot of people have a lot of shame about getting into it.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a misconception that people who study hypnosis are really into other sorts of manipulation. You know, and there were times where it seems to have overlapped either with things like the you know, pickup artistry type things. There's a field of study called neurolinguistic programming, or NLP, that a lot of people put stock in as a way of manipulating people that has some overlap with hypnosis in general. You know, there's also been a lot of studies and abuses of hypnosis in terms of using it for recovered memories in criminal cases. That's also given it a bit of a bad name, and it tends to come and go in terms of its acceptance in various communities. You know, largely the people I play with, the people who are most of the people in the erotic hypnosis community tend to be people who just want to use it as a way to play, whether that's with other BDSM things or in and of themselves, you know, in sort of a strange, bizarre erotic hypnosis universe.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like any other thing in kink where, like, if you look at it from an outsider's perspective, it might look kind of dangerous or shifty or problematic, but it's like, if the people doing it are consenting to it and have negotiated it and are excited about it, like, it's fine, even if it kind of looks weird from the outside. And I think that's something that we need to understand about all kinks.
Yeah, and I entirely agree with that. I think, and this is one thing that has come up in our community also, is there is an interesting recreational hypnosis community that is also out there that is not even came from a whole different area than BDSM, and those and from what I understand, the consent practices in that community are very problematic, let's say, where the idea is that if you're at one of their conventions, you're essentially impliedly consenting to being hypnotized.
Yikes.
And yeah, and that's, you know, and there are some issues with that, obviously. Yeah. And so there's been some sort of transition for people coming from that into the more kinky related erotic hypnosis community, and a little bit vice versa. So, you know, a lot of it has to be based on consent. It has to be based on negotiation and talking out what is allowable, what isn't allowable. And because erotic hypnosis can do so many different things, that whole negotiation process it can is really difficult. I think if you're, you know, negotiating a spanking, you know, there are a lot of things to negotiate with that, but there's still relatively finite things that you're talking about.
Right.
And whereas with erotic hypnosis, it can be anything from erotic hypnosis related rope scene to a CNC scene to, you know, just something that's, you know, a role play scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a good friend of mine, Zanny M, talks about how hypnosis is the hot sauce of kink. It can go well with anything. So
that's so interesting. Yeah, I've definitely found that to be true. And it's true also what you're saying about, like, how there's so much there that you almost, like, don't know what to ask for in a negotiation. Like, that was definitely my experience where, like, you know, I was dating this new person who had this kink that I'd never really done any research about. And he would be like, okay, do you want to play with this? I would say, yes, yes, very fun. Sounds great. And he'd be like, well, what do you want to do? And I'd be like, I don't even know, like, what's possible, which is part of why I started looking into materials like Mark Wiseman's book and your book. And I want to ask you about your book because it's fascinating. It's called Hypnotic Amnesia. What is hypnotic amnesia? What does that mean?
I've forgotten. No. So, you know, hypnotic amnesia is just, I mean, it's the use of hypnosis to make people, or, you know, help people forget things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are different ways of doing it. The book is about obviously different ways of doing that. I think we came up with about 30 different ways, and we're still coming up with different things you can do to help the mind forget something in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, Leah Lure, who I wrote this with, she's a hypnodom and she works with several people. And for her, it started out as a way at the very beginning to sort of test if hypnosis was working. And mm-hmm. so, you know, the way she would start is anytime she took a sip from her cup on a Skype session, if the person watching her would clap their hands, say hypnosis is fun, and then forget that they had done that.
That's so cute.
Yeah. So it can, it's a way to play with things like hypnotic triggers, where you can do a hypnotic trigger and then forget that that trigger is there. So, you know, if we've negotiated a scene where every time I scratch my nose, you're going to all of a sudden find yourself more and more turned on or start giggling uncontrollably,
mm-hmm.
you can use hypnotic amnesia to have you not notice that I'm rubbing, scratching my nose, or not make the connection between the scratching and whatever the trigger is.
Right.
So it's a way of sort of hiding control or things like that. And it can be used for a lot of other things as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought of it that way, as like a way of amping up the power dynamic, which I find really interesting as someone who's like super over analytical and like, I very much have that thing that hypnokinksters talk about, that's the hidden observer, where I'm like very like self-aware during a hypno scene. Mm. And like sometimes right. if I start thinking about like that I seem like I'm acting silly or something, it can like really take me out of the moment and take me out of trance or whatever's going on. So yeah, I think it would be really cool to like forget that a certain thing was a trigger and then maybe get more immersed in the action of the scene that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know people who use it a lot for CNC play, where you can, if you negotiate properly and have trust in the people playing, you can actually have people forget the entire negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
And so for certain types of CNC play, that can be really effective to put you in that moment. And it's interesting. You talk about having the analytical observer. I was very much the same way, and with, you know, practice and doing a lot of things, I help myself sort of get out of that mindset a little bit more, mm-hmm. which was really helpful for doing a lot of this sort of hypnotic play. And the book is very much about that sort of journey from someone who thought the idea of forgetting things was just a terrible idea, but was willing to give it a shot, to, I have forgotten so many things over the course of a weekend and then remembered them at the end of it and just been astonished by what just happened.
Yeah. It's very intense because, like, obviously hypnokink, you're always working from inside the person's brain basically, but like, there's something about it that feels even more, I want to use the word insidious, but I don't mean that in a bad way, because it's like, it's negotiated, right? But like, I've actually only done one small thing with Amnesia, because I think I want to like build up more trust with my partner. I think we both want to build up more trust before we do that. But like the one tiny thing that he did was he made me forget the name of the company he works at, which is like one of the first pieces of information I ever learned about him. Like it's something I definitely 100% know. And he woke me up from trance and he asked me, where do I work? And I couldn't think of it. Like I was able to name like places that he used to work and places that he's wanted to work. And I couldn't think of the name of his company. And as soon as he like released me from the amnesia, I thought of it immediately. And it was so weird because like even as he was like counting me up out of trance, in my head, I was like repeating the name of the company. I was like, I know this. I'm totally going to be able to say it. And then as soon as I came out, I was like, I don't know. It was so weird.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, no, it is internally, it is such a strange experience to have that sort of thing hidden from you or, you know, or hidden from me, as the case may be. And that moment when it comes back is such a strange, there's no other experience really like that, that often, except when you find your keys, I think, after you've been searching for them for a whole day. And it very much has that sort of idea of revelation and eureka all at once. And, you know, some people, it's a great way, like you said, to reinforce power dynamics between two people, because this person is literally having some kind of power dynamic control over your internal workings. And so I totally understand why Insidious is why he was referred to it that way. You know, but you know, there's all different ways you can use it in terms of, you know, forgetting triggers or forgetting, you know, why you might be in a particular place. We've played with other sorts of word triggers or sign triggers where if I see something happens to me and then I immediately forget that it happened. You know, and there's actually a Doctor Who related thing with that as well. But that would be go forever, and Bex isn't here, so I hate to have them miss that.
It seems like this could be a really scary thing to happen if you weren't adequately prepared for it to happen. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm wondering, like, do you have to be more intense about your negotiations and aftercare with this type of hypnoplay than with other types?
I don't know if it necessarily has to be more intense. My recommendation, mostly because it worked for me, is that when you're playing with things like memory, is to make sure that the boundaries are set in terms of time, so that, you know, whatever else happens, you will get this memory back. You know, and this sort of dovetails slightly into, you know, another sort of not quite misconception, but there's the idea that you can't be, you know, hypnotized to do things you don't want to do necessarily. And sometimes people will latch on to a particular trigger and find it hard to shake that off. And people do have the ability to shake them off, but it helps to sort of remind them to do that they have that ability and power, or else becomes, and if they aren't reminded of that, it kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where because they think they can't do it, they think they can't, and therefore they don't. So, you know, for something like hypnotic amnesia, you know, you would want to make sure that within a couple hours, you will get it back no matter what else happens.
Right.
You do want to make sure that you're not making them forget something that is important to them or their identity.
Right.
Unless that's a particular thing you want to play with, you want to be very careful about those things. You also want to make sure you're not doing things like trying to do therapy when you're not an actual licensed therapist, like forgetting a traumatic event.
Right.
You know? So there are definite things that I would always recommend people being careful about when doing negotiations. But, you know, for me, I don't know if that's necessarily more intense, but I think it's definitely something where you want to, there are certain things that you want to be careful about that if you treat it like any other kind of kinky activity, you might not think about those things necessarily.
Yeah, the therapy piece is really interesting for me with regards to hypnosis. I was just flipping through the book today, and there's a part where Lee says that theoretically you could use these tools to do things like forget you're socially anxious or forget you're not funny or whatever. And I was thinking, like, that's really interesting. And if it worked, it could be really, really helpful. But then, like, you get into the whole, like you said, like, you really shouldn't be using this as a therapeutic tool if you're not actually a therapist. Although I'm sure people are doing that. But,
right.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, tricky ethical situations there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I totally agree with that. I think you do want to be careful with those things because, you know, the mind, everyone's mind will react differently to something. I mean, this is one of the issues with erotic hypnosis and hypnosis in general when people ask, what does a trance feel like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone's trance is going to feel very different because as individuals, we're all very different from each other.
Right.
And so while, you know, you might have me forget my anxiety and I'd be fine, someone else, if you have them do that, might have a different effect on them because they're just, their mind is constructed differently than mm-hmm. mine. And so unless you're prepared to do the work and do the therapeutic work on that, then that is definitely something you want to stay away from.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Totally makes sense. I want to shift gears a little bit and ask mm-hmm. you about your face slapping induction, if that's okay. We were talking on Twitter a while ago, and you mentioned to me that you're working on something new, and it included mm-hmm. an induction by face slapping. And I was immediately like, what? I love face slapping. But I was having trouble sort of imagining how you would put someone in trance using face slapping, because a lot of my experience going into trance is about, like, relaxation and kind of zoning out. And so I had a hard time imagining how something as intense as the pain of a face slapping could put mm-hmm. me into trance. But yeah, I'd love to know more about the face slapping induction.
Sure. I'm surprised it took you this long to ask about that. this is, again, one of those other misconceptions. You know, before we talked about this, you had asked, one of your questions you had asked to talk about was misconceptions, and I realized I could talk for a whole hour about misconceptions.
There's so many.
Yeah, but one of them is that idea that it has to be about relaxation.
Hmm.
You know, hypnotic trance is about just inducing some suggestible altered mental state.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be done usually through some sort of relaxation, but it doesn't have to be. So often if you do something that is a shock to the system, where you are essentially pulling the critical mind out of its normal functioning,
mm-hmm.
I think the technical language for that is a pattern interrupt.
Mm.
You know, if you sometimes see stage hypnosis, which is all the subject, but if you sometimes see stage hypnotists work, they will sometimes do a thing where they all of a sudden pull the arm and pull them forward.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually part of what is called a handshake induction. That is a pattern interrupt. They're doing something that you're not expecting when you shake their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And in that interrupt, you have a moment where the critical faculties sometimes will shut down a little bit. And then you can work into bringing that person into a trance. A face slapping induction is very much the same thing. If you are, and it doesn't have to be necessarily a hard slap, depending on the person, you want to negotiate that, obviously.
Yeah.
As part of it. But you know, the fact that it is something where you are interacting with someone in a way that isn't expected, and that feeling, as you know, it is a different feeling because it is something that is sometimes taboo or something you're not used to, maybe intimate, you know, depending on your perspective on it.
Mm-hmm.
It can really be a shock to the system. And when you do that shock to the system, you can then turn that into an induction.
That's so interesting. You explained that so well that I went from being utterly mystified about that to completely understanding how that would work.
Thank you.
One of the things I really like about face slapping, especially when it's like, it builds up to being like very fast and very rhythmic, is that it is so disorienting that like, I don't have time to like regain my sense of myself in between the hits. And it's something that often brings me to like emotional catharsis. Like I'll just like randomly burst into tears after, I guess it's not random because someone's been slapping my face, but
right,
you know,
right.
Like I'll just suddenly burst into tears, and it's unlike almost anything else I've done in kink because it's just so overwhelming and I have no time to like get back to a state of normalcy. So yeah, I can totally understand how that would be an induction. That's so interesting. I have to try this.
Well, if you do, please let me know how it goes. Yeah. And, you know, and for me anyway, like I'm a bit of a switch. And so for me, it often can go one of two ways, which is if I'm sort of feeling bottomy or subby, it can flip the switch and all of a sudden I'm like, you don't hit me again or else, you know, it's we're going to have to renegotiate everything. Mm-hmm. Or I can go into a trance. So it is one of those things where you want to be careful, obviously, because it's something that you don't often know what your reaction is going to be and you want to be ready to handle that.
Mm-hmm. It almost seems like anything could be an induction if you do it right. Would that be fair to say?
That is extremely fair to say. Yeah, the book that Lee and I are working on next, which we're working on very slowly, has the working title of 101 Inductions. And cool. Part of that is because just about anything can be an induction with, you know, intent. And, you know, when we've done classes, we've done sort of improv induction workshops. Mm-hmm. Where we will just grab whatever is handy and see what we can do to turn it into an induction.
That's so cool. I guess I should have mentioned also for folks who don't know this that an induction is the technique that you use to get someone into trance.
Yes.
It's kind of important to know. I went to this I went to a local hypnokink workshop that was supposed to be like a 101 level intro to hypnosis, and the person giving the talk did not use the word induction or show any examples of them or explain them at all, because he was using a trance trigger with his demo bottom. And I was like, how are you doing a 101 level hypnosis class and not teaching anything about induction? So I think that I should perhaps gift this man your book when it comes out.
since I know who you're talking about, let's not do that. that is one of those tricky things where, yeah. So the different parts of a hypnotic trance, you'll have what is, and it mirrors a little bit of what you might do in a kink scene. You'll have what is called a pre-talk, where you talk about expectations, talk about what a trance might feel like and what is to be expected, and you negotiate what you're going to be doing. Mm-hmm. If you're starting out, my recommendation is usually to just go into a trance and maybe do a trigger to bring you back into a trance space and then stop that from there. And then there's the induction, and then there's the trance itself, which includes suggestions, and then there's the count up or the bringing them out of a trance. And then there's, you know, aftercare or, you know, closing out the scene and sort of debrief, depending on what you've all negotiated. And those are sort of the basic, you know, things of a trance, and those can be altered or changed in so many different ways depending on what your interests are and what you've negotiated.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about, since you said that you're a switch, I always like to ask people about aftercare, particularly if they have kinks that are not very well known. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine, also from talking to other hypnokinksters, that like aftercare for this type of play is like somewhat different from aftercare from like maybe more physical kinks, like things like spanking, because like you're all in the brain. Like, how do you like to approach aftercare for hypnosis?
Yeah, I, and this is one of the things when I talk to people who are coming from kink scenes into hypno, I will say, hey, be prepared that your aftercare needs are going to be vastly different. Mm-hmm. And that the vulnerabilities you might experience are going to be different, you know, not necessarily more or less, just different from what you might be used to. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, it really depends on how intense the scene is. If you go to a hypno convention, you'll often see people negotiating very quick in and out scenes. Mm-hmm. Where this is another thing that often comes up with people making the transition, because you can demarcate a physical BDSM scene really easily. Someone's being tied up or someone is being spanked. But if you see two people leaning against a wall, are they having a conversation or are they actually doing a trance scene right now?
Right.
Are they interruptible? I don't know. You know, and so, you know, in terms of a particular scene, I think much depends on what is going on. and how intense it is. You know, for some people, they might need to be social. Some people might need to be alone. Some people might need cookies. Some people might need a cup of hot tea. You know, some people, it's don't touch me. You know, some people, I need to hug and to lie down in a warm blanket. It can be any of those things. And sometimes the same person can need all of those in the course of a weekend. You know, the one thing I will say that is often different, I think, is there's a thing that seems to be unique to hypnosis called fractionation.
Mm-hmm. I love fractionation. It's my favorite part of any scene.
It is amazingly fun, but it's also, it can linger for a while. And even when you're awake, you can be in a state where you're still a little bit suggestible. The story I've told when talking about this is, Lee and I were in Chicago at the Institute of Art, and we spent the afternoon where she had hypnotized me to think that I was in various works of art. So I spent the day in a Monet haystack.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
And it was fantastic. Like, I could hear the dogs barking from over the fence. Like, it was just amazing and strange. And so we came out of that, and I was fractionated, and we ran into some friends of ours who were there for the same convention, and we went across the street for lunch, and it was one of those sort of cafeteria type places, and I'd grabbed a root beer to drink, and I go to the register, and I tell the guy behind the register, you know, I'm feeling really hungry right now, and he looks at me and says, well, why don't you try one of our world famous chocolate malts? And I said, I should try one of your world famous chocolate malts. And he went to go make it, and then a friend of mine came up, and she reached into the refrigerator and turned to me and grabbed an orange juice and turned to me and said, an orange juice sounds really good right now. And I said, you're right, an orange juice sounds really good right now. And that's how I wound up going back to my table with a root beer, a chocolate malt, and an orange juice.
Too many drinks.
And, you know, and I wouldn't have done that unless I was feeling fractionated and suggestible right then. And I don't think I would have been talked into maybe buying a car or something. It's still part of the aftercare thing. You want to be careful about negotiations. You know, this is one of the things that sometimes is a bit of a struggle because you're in a suggestible state. And so you want to make sure you're not taking advantage of someone or you're not being taken advantage of when you're in those states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the most interesting things that Mark Wiseman told me, which I found totally fascinating, was he said that one time he was at a hypno convention and he saw that there was someone walking around who like clearly was like suggestible and like fractionated and not, hadn't come fully out of it. And he stopped the person and asked them if they thought this year's convention was better than last year's, because he thought that like engaging the person's sort of like logical, rational mind would help them sort of come back to their brain a little bit. And I was like, I've never heard anyone else recommend that, but that actually makes a ton of sense to me. I think that's so cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that.
He's so smart.
And it's also not... Yeah, he is. And it's also not for, you know, just subjects as well. It can be for hypnotists.
Because, tell me about that.
Well, because oftentimes hypnotists, you know, when they hypnotize other people, they're hearing the words, or they might be around hypnotic language a lot, and they can go into a bit of a trance themselves. You know, and it's a little bit of a top high mixed in with a little bit of, you know, some sort of self-hypnosis. Lea Lure actually talks about this a lot, that sometimes when she's doing a particularly intense hypnotic scene, she goes into a trance where she's actually not really keeping track of what she's saying, but is in a different sort of altered state. And, you know, oftentimes, if you're around a lot of hypnotic language for a long period of time, that will have some kind of influence on you, even if you're not necessarily going into a trance.
Right. That's so cool. It reminds me of like psych research I've read about the mental states that DOMs and subs get into, like subspace, top space, because it's like they talk about it as being similar to flow state, which I think also reminds me a lot of what trance feels like, but they're all kind of like different facets of a similar thing, or at least I think so. It's so interesting. We need more research on this stuff.
I agree. and you know, you talk about fractionation, you know, some people just love the feeling of trance, and you know, that's what they'll be into, and there's a definite feeling that people will have with it. And fractionation really accentuates that feeling. It is so much fun.
Yeah.
And then for other people, it is a tool into other things. Mm-hmm. Whether that's kinky play or just sort of random fun play.
Yeah, I think we were having a discussion on Twitter a while ago about how trance can feel therapeutic, not in the sense of being like therapy, but like it's like nourishing psychologically in some way. Like there are times with my boyfriend when like I don't really feel like doing a lot of kinky stuff. Once I'm in trance, I just like maybe I've had like a really stressful week and I just want to go blank for a while and forget about all my problems and not be thinking about anything. And like as a person who's gone through life, you know, trying to meditate and trying to do mindfulness and like all these different things that are supposed to bring you that sense of peace, hypnosis is actually one of the only things that can really get my mind to quiet down. So it's really, really nice in that way.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I'm a little bit like you in that sense where my mind is often working. And as you may have noticed, I talk very fast too. So in very much the same way, like that quiet is really nice to be able to experience. I'm with you.
Okay, I want to talk to you about another kink that we share in common.
Uh-oh.
This is so exciting to me. Okay, so I have this, like, I have a winking kink. There was a long period of time where I wasn't sure if it was a kink, and it only came to me after I was, like, involved in the kink community for a long time, where I was like, oh, I have sexual feelings when certain people wink at me. Wonder if it's a kink. Interesting. But we've talked on Twitter a little bit about how you also have this kink, and you're the only other person I've ever talked to who has it. So, like, tell me about what's your deal with winking?
It is a long and intense deal with winking. ever since I think I saw it in a Trivial Pursuit question, which was, what does nictating mean?
Which I didn't know that word until you said it to me on Twitter and I had to look it up. I was like, how did I not know this?
How did you not know that word?
I don't know.
Oh my
know.
Goodness. Yes. So winking or blinking, but especially winking, wow. So ever since I can remember, I have enjoyed when someone winks and there is just something weirdly intimate about that touches me in a strange way. Mm-hmm. That is a turn on, and that if someone does that, I'm just drawn to them. And it's like it's an idea of a secret being shared and something that, you know, can be expressed, that sort of weird level of intimacy that can be expressed just in that flash that is really tough to encapsulate in any other way, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I find it very difficult to articulate what it is about it that I like, but I do think that intimacy is part of it. Like I've read the Wikipedia article about winking, and it talks about sort of like the different cultural meanings that winking has. And there's sort of like this notion of we're both in on this joke together, or we're both the only ones to have seen this thing that happened or something. And it's very like, it really like brings me into my body and feels like almost like getting splashed with cold water or something. Like for me, it's like this very sudden like jolt of some kind of feeling. It's very strange.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I know. There's some, and I'll have to see if I can find it, but there's like a porn gif where the woman is in the middle of something and winks at the camera, and I just thought it was the hottest thing I'd ever seen. And I can't explain why. It was just incredibly hot and hotter than what she was doing, frankly.
So, okay, stop me if this question is too personal. Mm-hmm. But I, like, because I'm so new to viewing this as an actual kink of mine, I have struggled with, like, knowing how to, like, play with it. Like, I have had partners who knew that I had it and would sort of, like, wink at me just randomly, but I feel like they didn't really know what to do with it, because I don't really know what to do with it or what to tell them to do with it. So, like, have you combined this with other kinks?
To be fair, I haven't, because I think I think one of the appeals, at least for me, is that it's such a spontaneous, it only really works if it's spontaneous, right?
Yeah.
You can almost always tell when someone is forcing it for the effect. And so combining it, asking for it just seems to be like, it's almost like one of those weird things that ruins the mood almost.
Yeah.
I probably could. Now that we're having this conversation, I'll probably talk to Lee about having me forget that I've asked her to wink at me at a particular point, and have that be a trigger for something else.
That's brilliant. Yes.
So I will do that and report back to you.
Okay. Great. Yeah, I was curious because like I had an experience combining winking with hypnosis, but it like even that was like very spontaneous in a way, because what happened was I had just lined up these videos that my boyfriend has sent me of him winking, and they were so like asynchronous, and I was just like watching them for a really long time and started to get trancy. And neither of us were expecting this or had planned for this or had even thought of this as a possibility. And so, yeah, I think the spontaneity was part of the magic there, because it was like I almost couldn't control my trancy reaction to these winks. It was very weird.
I think I remember you talking about that. I thought that was one of the hottest things I'd ever heard, actually. So, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a strange kink. There's a few more of us on FetLife, but I want to have discussions with these people. Maybe I should start messaging them. I don't even know what I want to ask them. I just want to be like, so winks, right? They're great.
Winks, discuss.
Are there other kinks that you like to combine with hypnokink? Like you said, it's like the hot sauce of kinks, but like, what pairs really well with that hot sauce for you?
I'll be your hypno sommelier.
what a great phrase.
Oh, thanks. I think, like I said, it could be used for just about anything. For me, it can be used for enhancing power exchange dynamics. If it's nice to be able to feel someone's control over you, even from a distance away. One of the nice things about hypnosis is that you can really do it via Skype with people on other sides of, as I'm sure you know, from other sides of the country or even other sides of the world.
Yeah.
And it can be a very intimate experience at the same time. So, being able to be forced to your knees, or forcing someone to their knees with a trigger, or when you can do pleasure triggers or pain triggers. I know some people who do spanking triggers, where if I snap my finger, you'll feel a spank on your rear end, and mm-hmm. being able to do that from a distance is great. And it's so combining with those sorts of things is great. I have done some sort of toppies, punching scenes where I turned up the pain that they were feeling from the punches, and all I had to do by the end of the scene was just be tapping them lightly. So it's great if you're a lazy top, because it's not a lot of effort being expended. but it can sometimes just be its own darn thing. Like I remember doing a scene with a friend of mine where both of our tops had hypnotized us to find that we had these LED rainbow colored eggs that sort of floated through the colors of the rainbow over mm-hmm. and over again. And we were hypnotically fascinated by them and were finding that we would be drawn into trance. But we were turned it into an egg toss back and forth with the idea that we didn't want to be the one holding onto it at the end and in the trance. Because that would mean we lost. And because we were both so competitive, we just kept passing it back and forth, driving each other into a trance. And I think we went about 30 minutes and it became a game where about 20 friends of ours were watching us do this. Just this weird thing going back and forth. And I told my spouse about it, and she's like, how depraved. And I don't know if that's kinky. I don't know if that's BDSM. It's just what it was, and it was fun, and we enjoy doing it. So, it's the thing I like so much about it is you can do so much with it that isn't, if you want to take it into very erotic, realms, you can do that. If you just want to do something non-erotic and playful, you can do that as well. I think it's one of the nice things about it is there's a lot of people who I think identify as on the gray A spectrum who are drawn to it for those reasons as well. Mm-hmm. So it's really been, it's always been fascinating to me. It's just one of the things I really like.
That's so interesting. Yeah, it's really, I think, qualitatively different from so many kinks, and yet there are also lots of places where it's similar, and there are lots of things I like about it that I also like about submission in lots of other contexts. It's been really, mm-hmm. really interesting for me to learn about, and I appreciate you being here to teach us more stuff about it. I'm always down to learn more about hypnosis.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So before we wrap up, tell me, what's next for you? What are you working on? I know you got the inductions book coming up, so what's going on with that, and what else is up for you?
With that, well, the inductions book, like the Hypnotic Amnesia book, took us about 2 years to finally get out. I suspect the inductions book will also take us, probably, if we're lucky, another year to get out, but hopefully sooner than that. But we are slowly working on that. I also have a collection of short stories called Kinky Trifles that's available on Kindle, and I might be putting another volume out in the near future as well.
The other thing that's coming up in early November is a HypnoCon in the Bay Area called Mindquake, and it should be a lot of fun. It's run by some friends of mine, and you can find information about that at mindquake.org.
And you can find me on Twitter at DJ Pynchon, and on my blog on Tumblr, which is sadly hypno-sandwich.com.
Why is that sad?
There were so many better names to choose.
That's okay. I think it's good.
Thank you. And on FetLife, I'm Herder of Cats.
Okay. Why? If I might ask.
I don't know. So when I started, I didn't think I was going to be doing this, where, you know, branding would be important and right. having a consistent name would be important. Mm-hmm. And then I got in too deep too quickly, so at a certain point I didn't want to change back.
Yeah. So. Okay, that makes sense. I mean,
I appreciate you saying that, but it really doesn't.
I mean, I think I kind of get it, because, like, what if, you know, being a hypnotop is kind of like herding cats sometimes? I don't know.
Sure, yes, I like that explanation better. Let's go with that.
Thank you so much. This was so fun.
You're very welcome.
Have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. My co-host Bex, who's usually here with me, their website is at bextalksex.com, and you can follow them on Twitter and Instagram also at bextalksex. Together we're the Dildorks. We are at thedildorks.com and the Dildorks on all your favorite podcast apps. We would love if you could rate and review us, and if you want to support what we're doing, you can check us out at patreon.com/thedildorks. Our logo is by Amy. Our theme song is by Protodome. And thank you so much to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye. I'm scared to do that one by myself. My co-host Bex isn't here this week, but they're fine. There's nothing wrong with them.
There definitely is nothing wrong with them.
No, they're fine. It's so late. I'm not making any sense. I want to say that again, because that came off really, really suspicious sounding, like I murdered them, and that's not what happened.